Good morning, Santa Barbara. This is KCSB 91.9 FM, and you're tuned in to the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. Yes, it's another Poodle Radio. I am Colin Marshall. As always, I write the KCSB column for The Independent. I write about books for The Independent, and I host this show, Poodle Radio, every Thursday morning, 8 until 9 o'clock. We're going to get right into it because we have four segments today for you, four Santa Barbara-filled segments. The first cut you're hearing right now, organized by pop culture editor Allie Cumingore, is from who? Looks like it's called Chameleons Migrate South. It's from Cannons and Clouds. They're playing Muddy Waters on Friday, May 6th. The time always comes to announce those, and I'm never quite on it. In any case, the first guest we have this morning comes from Pueblo, and it's a word you've, of course, heard, but I don't mean the word. I mean the acronym. I mean the acronym that stands for People United for Economic Justice, Building Leadership Through Organizing. We have their new executive director, about whom Nick Welsh recently wrote in the Indy, Mark Alvarado. Mark, welcome to the program.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. You?
I'm doing really well. I'm sorry I missed you on that.
Yeah, no problem.
I'm doing good. I'm doing really good. Thank you.
Now, people will have heard of Pueblo, and they'll know that it has something to do with helping immigrants on the South Coast. What is it? What do you do?
Well, really what we're trying to do now with Pueblo is trying to move working families forward, trying to get out of this, marginalization, the stigma, you know, the stigma that, you know, immigrants are no good for our economy, that immigrants are no good for our quality of life, when in fact they are the backbone of our economy, of our tourists, our agriculture, our service industry. You know, there's a lot of issues that people don't really want to talk about because of the simple fact that there's a lot of fear in terms of, you know, the lack of education that immigrants bring to the community. It's a Pueblo's job to educate.
Now, Nick wrote in his column that it's important to your mission that the term is working families as opposed to anything else. I mean, what are you displacing when you say working families? What wrong ideas are you displacing?
Well, the simple fact that working families are residents. They're residents of this community.
Right.
And even the fact that they're immigrants, we're all immigrants, you know, and to use the term illegal alien or illegal, you know, it just brings a negative connotation on the whole idea of trying to move people forward. So since they're residents and working families, let's look at them in a positive light so we can help bring them forward, you know, help them get banked, help them get financially literate, help them in the educational system so that they improve the quality of life, not only of themselves, but of the entire community.
Now, what has Pueblo been doing to shine that light so far? You know, in its existence, what historically has it been up to?
Well, historically, you know, first it addressed the living wage issue, you know, to ensure that all workers, you could, especially in a community like Santa Barbara, could have a livable wage. That's one thing for sure that Pueblo has been doing. Of late, it's been looking at some of the discriminatory or alleged discriminatory practices, perhaps, of law enforcement around DUI checkpoints, of the confiscation of vehicles when somebody's pulled over, the ESCOM issue of people with small infractions being deported because ICE can now come into the county jails and run fingerprints. You know, ESCOM is something that's on the table right now, and we're looking at that. So really, Pueblo has been kind of really calling out some of maybe things that could fall under the radar. But under my tenure, I really want to try to concentrate on issues that are going to help to move family forwards. We're going to continue the political edge. We're going to continue to call people out. But at the same time, we're chasing our tail if we don't take the responsibility and recommendations how to move people forward. You know, Colin, I've been down on the Mexican border for the last 17 years. I've seen the future. I know what immigration looks like, and I know what gang culture looks like. And I tell you right now, Santa Barbara has a very manageable situation in front of it. It's just that, if we continue to sweep things under the rug, it's just going to fester a problem.
What do you think Pueblo should be doing under your leadership that it hasn't, or maybe that you have for a long time wanted to see it do? We'll put it that way.
Well, I mean, one thing that for sure that I want to see Pueblo do is establish itself as a leader in program development around you know, issues for working families. I want to see Pueblo be a leader around partnership development, working with other organizations to help move families forward. Pueblo can't do it all. I mean, Santa Barbara, you know, one of the quotes I've heard since I've returned to Santa Barbara is resource rich, but partnership weak or lean. And, you know, I come from a background, a very diplomatic background, where I think that we can work together. You know, it's all about relationship building. It's all about partnership development. You know, we're not always going to agree on everything. We're not going to eliminate poverty. We're not going to eliminate discrimination. But at least we can start to look at programs and services and develop strategies where we can address these issues.
Now, you mentioned you spent time, the article mentions you spent time in Texas. You've seen the border. Yeah, you've seen much worse situations than Santa Barbara.
Right.
Put it that way. How much worse?
Like I said, I've seen the future.
Right.
I mean, where I was living and working, there's 3 million people right on the border. It's the highest international boundary populated in the world. Is El Paso, Texas, and Ciudad Juarez. And within that, I've seen illegal immigration. Within that, I've seen gang violence. Within that, I've seen babies, you know, dead. I've seen bodies on the street. You know, I've seen things that here in Santa Barbara may never see. But, you know, the way that people try to hyperbolize things here in Santa Barbara, I'm like, wait a minute, this is a very manageable situation that we have here. You know, and if we just put our heads together and we get political representation also that reflects the diversity of this community, I think we can do something. But until we get that political diversity that represents our community countywide, then, you know, we're still going to have some issues because of the simple fact that there's not adequate representation.
So what do you think the rest of the population of Santa Barbara needs to learn or has wrong about the kind of working families Pueblo helps? What are the misconceptions?
One, that they're all gangbangers, that they all bring in anchor babies, you know, that they're just ignorant and stupid people, and, you know, and they're never going to amount to anything, you know, when in fact they're human beings first and foremost, and everybody has the capability of progressing if given the opportunity. Now, I'm not all about handouts, I'll tell you that right now. I think that's one of the biggest mistakes we made in the war on poverty. We gave everything out without any accountability. But if you can teach a person, you know, through volunteerism, through workforce training, through education, you know, I think people can start to feel more honored by the simple fact that they are being accepted in this community. So I think the misconceptions are there because nobody stood up and said, wait a minute, how can we address this issue comprehensively, holistically, and look at things from start to finish? I think, you know, starting with the young ones, and young ones learn from their parents. So, you know, if we have to start getting parents more involved, and so the kids can see the parents come out of the shadow, so the kids can another next generation say, you know, it's okay for me to run for student body president. It's okay for me to get involved in athletics, because we have a lot of kids that don't get involved because of the simple fact that they feel like they're, or they know that they're not really accepted.
So is this a matter of having this part of the population, which is a significant part, as politically represented as would be proportional for them, you know, to have that voice politically as strong that matches the strength of their actual numbers?
Well, that's, you know, and it starts in the neighborhoods, really. It starts in the neighborhoods, and we have to organize in the neighborhoods, forming neighborhood associations, starting to build that consciousness, that political consciousness, that social consciousness. And politics isn't for everybody, but at least people can feel like, you know what, hey, you know what, there's this activity going on in my corner where they can pick up the phone and not be afraid to pick up the phone because they think that, you know, that they're going to be discriminated against. You know, so there's a lot of barriers like that we need to break down so that the political representation can broaden its perspective on issues and not so be geared towards discrimination.
Now, these working families, you know, when they have fears about being more prominent in society, you know, whether it's about discrimination, I mean, what is it about? Is it about, as you said, discrimination, or do they fear actually getting, you know, removed from the country?
Well, that's a real issue because of the simple fact that we do have undocumented people here, and that's the reality is if they are found undocumented, they're going to be deported if that process is in place. Now, what I understand also too is that people are coming here because there's jobs here and somebody's hiring them, and somebody has to be accountable for who they're hiring. You know, I just watched something, a Senate hearing yesterday, you know, and that was what they were talking about, is how do we hold employers more accountable for hiring, you know, undocumented folks? And so it's a double-edged sword. So I think that folks need to know the law. I think Pueblo has a responsibility of creating citizenship opportunities for residents. I think that we have to start understanding, people have to start understanding that if you want to live and work in this country, you have to legitimize yourself. But we have to create that comprehensive pathway for folks. If we don't, then we're going to continue to chase our tail on all these issues.
So that's priority one, then. You get that down, and then everything else can follow, but you have to have that path.
You have to have that path, and that path is filled with citizenship, it's filled with financial literacy, it's filled with education, it's filled with civic engagement, political action. It's a road that people can take. It's not everybody's going to participate in every aspect of that road, but at least they know that they can find some kind of quality of life moving forward and not feeling like, you know, they have to live in the shadows. And at the same time, the broader community sees them as stakeholders. Because one of the problems that we have with the political process is people say, well, what's in it for me? Well, right. You know, obviously, if you have a population who's marginalized, they don't see any of it in it for them. But if you create stakeholders, then they start to get involved one way or another, whether it's at their school, the community center, politics, or what have you.
So let's say people are listening to this and know families in this situation, know these kind of working families, you know, what can they do? How can they learn more about Pueblo and what Pueblo does? How can they keep their finger on the pulse of this or help out? You know,
we're always looking for volunteers and we're always looking for members. I mean, Pueblo was built on a volunteer basis to create action around a lot of these issues. You know, our number is 882-2484. SBPueblo.org is our website. I encourage anybody just to come and talk and let's have dialogue and discussion on these issues. One of the things that I want to do right away is create community forums around this issue, around these issues. The gang injunction. I spoke to our mayor and I told him, you know, we need to have a special hearing on this. Folks don't understand what's going on. And so there's a lot of, you know, problems in the community because people feel like they're being targeted and what have you. I think if we have more discussion, more dialogue, communication, you know, I think that we're able to at least break down a lot of the barriers that people see when issues come forward.
So there's a lot of this is about making things clearer, making things more out in the open, not necessarily changing all the laws right away, but just getting things into the light.
Right. I mean, let's just look at the employer issue. I mean, nobody's talking about that. I mean, why are people are coming here to work in restaurants, in hotels, in the fields. And if you did a sweep, I'm sure you would find quite a few people who are undocumented.
Hmm.
But is that really their fault?
Right.
I mean, the jobs are here. I mean, and someone's hiring them. So we have to have that discussion of how do we create more of a transparent situation across the board on both ends instead of just hammering at the immigrant, hammering at the families. You know, we have to create a balance in the issues.
Now, that website, one more time,
is sbpueblo.org.
sbpueblo.org. And I've been speaking to Mark Alvarado, the new executive director of Pueblo, who's been profiled by Nick Welsh recently in The Independent. Also, he's a former KCSB programmer. 89 till when?
Oh, I was here 89 till about 93.
93? 93,
playing,
yeah. Playing reggae, doing Chicano Kaleidoscope.
Yeah. You know, I'm a musician too, you know, and so we had a little thing going on here. And you know, it's just nice to be back home. You know, really, I'm just honored by the fact that Pueblo asked me to come on board and to help, you know, to assist the community. You know, I want to be helpful. I want to be diplomatic on these issues because you're not going to get what you want if you want war. If you want war, look what war has got us. You know,
right.
what we need to create is more of a diplomatic situation to get past these issues so that we can live more harmoniously in this community. Santa Barbara's beautiful, you know, but let's create a beautiful, not just a beautiful physical environment, but let's create a more of a beautiful relationships with everybody. I mean, that's my goal.
Well, Mark, thanks so much for taking the time. Come back to KCSB for a few minutes, and I hope to have you on again soon.
All right. Thank you, Colin.
It's KCSB. It's Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. We're going to come right back talking about an art show following up with Lark Bateau, who you heard last on the show about for turning that up so loud. You heard her talking about Toba City, Japan. So stay tuned. She's going to be on in just a moment on Poodle Radio, KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara.
Somewhere secret, somewhere safe, and somewhere
KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. My name is Colin Marshall. This is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent on KCSB. Thanks for sticking with us. We're hearing another track organized by pop culture editor Ali Cumming-Gore. This is from Frank Turner. It's The Road. He's playing Velvet Jones on Friday, May 6th. And now, as I just promised moments ago, we're bringing back a guest from Poodle Radio's recent history. You last heard Lark Bateau talking about Toba, Japan, the sister city of Santa Barbara, and some of the damage it endured. And it looks like it's working through in the recent series of disasters. I think it's legitimate to call them a series that hit Japan. But now you're back, Lark, talking about an art show, Buddha Abides, going on, opening tomorrow, right?
Actually, the grand reception opening is Saturday.
This Saturday. But it's there's an importance to May 6th, right? It goes up tomorrow or something?
It's up now, and tonight is First Thursday, so all the galleries are open. Everybody's been going to be wandering around Santa Barbara looking at the art, and they're certainly welcome to go to the gallery, which is Santa Barbara Frame Shop and Gallery in Arlington Court opposite the Arlington Theater.
Okay, yes, I think everybody knows where that is. Now, it's the 11th year. How did this get started? Let's go back 11 years. What's the origin of Buddha Abides?
Well, in 1999, I was at a meditation retreat, a Buddhist meditation retreat in Lone Pine, and I had three inspirations that came to me during my meditation, and one of them was to create an art show in the spring, inviting local artists to create Buddhist-themed art, and to have that show up be up for a month, and that 20% of the profits would go to charities.
Mm. And we have the charities this year, the Santa Barbara Domestic Violence Solutions and the Tibetan Children's Village in India. Was it always those, or have they been different?
It is always those two charities, yes. It's the global and local idea.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, getting a collection of Buddhist art together for this show, I mean, is this art by Buddhist artists or Buddhist themed art, or how does that work?
I would say we have a little of both, because some of the artists are practicing Buddhists, but some of them are artists and with Buddhist inclinations perhaps, or they just like the idea. Whatever it is, it's fine with me what they're doing. And what was interesting is originally I was seeing a lot of Buddhist art and a lot of ancient Buddhist art, and it was all from Asia. And I thought, well, you know, there's so many artists in America, and American Buddhism is emerging, and it would be great to see it represented in art as well. And so I just put out the word and got a terrific response from all the local artists. It was quite wonderful.
And it seems like California, you can dial it down even further. There's almost Californian Buddhism or types. I mean, it's very popular here compared to the rest of the U.S., right?
I think that's probably true. The whole sort of Tassajara Zen monastery up north there. And yeah, it's true. There's a lot of Buddhism in California.
What can you tell us about the art this year for the 11th annual? What kind of things are we going to see to give people a good tantalizing image of their shows?
Oh my gosh. It's such a variety and such talent. We have so many different pieces this year. About 100 artists submitted work, and it ranges from sculptures. There's a gorgeous sculpture, full-size seated Buddha made out of driftwood entirely, which is spectacular. And then we have watercolors, we have oil paints, photography, there might be some jewelry, such a variety, a lot of assemblage pieces. And also, a few years ago during the recession, I decided I needed to start something that was affordable and would get people excited and still buying because of the recession.
Right, of course.
And proposed the idea of having all artists submitting pieces to also submit a 5x5-inch piece.
Five by five.
So we have these 5x5s that sell for $55. So they're very affordable, and there's always a bunch of them, and they're quite whimsical and wonderful. And we always have them on a wall. So
I would imagine those sell out.
Yeah, they sell really fast.
So I want to get the important dates here. We mentioned that first Thursday.
Yes.
Which is, of course, today is the first
That's
Thursday.
Right. Yes,
so that'll be open. People can see it. And then there's the grand opening Saturday?
This Saturday, May 7th, from 5 to 7 p.m. Yes.
And what goes on there at the grand opening?
Well, all the artists should be there, and all their friends should be there. And my brother actually is coming up from Los Angeles to perform. He's a wonderful singer-songwriter. His name's David Bateau. And it's just a joyful experience. I think we'll have a representative from Domestic Violence Solutions speaking also, so if people have questions about that. And it's a wonderful opening where everybody's just excited to be there, and there's food and wine, and it's just a celebration.
And I find, you know, when I go to grand openings, I always have to come back to galleries to really get an idea, because, you know, there's,
it can be a
I
crush.
Know people there, and there's, you just get pulled aside a lot.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
How long does this stay open for people to come back and view?
The show will be up for a whole month.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so there's plenty of time to go look more carefully at the pieces, because there are a lot of people there. But like at any opening, exciting to be there when there's a whole crowd. There's an energy there that's just gets you inspired and enthused about it all. So.
That's very true. Now, over the 11 years, have you seen the selection of Buddhist art change? I mean, it's the first Buddha abides has to have been very different than this one's going to turn out to be. I mean, what have you seen over the decade?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because I actually never know what's going to show up until the week before.
Oh.
Everybody submits things the Saturday before the opening, and then it's put up that week. So every year it's a surprise, and every year I'm astounded with the creativity of our local artists, both at the level of humor. There's a lot of humor, beauty, and also things that are very moving. And I would say it has always been a variety. We have had some years where we've had just really reverential pieces that are just awe-inspiring. In other years where we seem to have a little more whimsy. But I can't say that it's every year is completely different, only in that every piece is different. But they're always the range. There's a terrific range from exquisite to irreverent to just lovely to just easy on the eyes and just things that make you think and touch your heart, and it's just really quite an experience.
And when I read books on Buddhism or talk to people about Buddhism, you know, that seems to be more than okay with Buddhism, is that you have the light next to the reverent, that you have the jokes next to the serious contemplations.
Well, it's kind of essential because if you can't take yourself lightly, you know, you're just never actually going to be enlightened, I don't think, because, you know, there's nothing ever stays the same. So we're always having to jump and dance and think again about what's going on and be sort of open-hearted to it all. I mean, there's a seriousness, there's a devotion that really makes a big difference in one's practice, but it has to be balanced with this lightness and this kindness. We can get so devoted and so determined to sort of change all our bad habits and think, be more charitable in our thinking, and we're constantly confronted with all our bad thoughts, and we're just so embarrassed and humiliated and frustrated. And so that's where the kindness comes in, and we have to be very kind to ourselves and to others, because everybody is full of challenges and difficulties and inconsistencies, and we have to have a lot of heart to live in this world.
Something we can learn a little more, hopefully, from the art at Buddha Abides.
Yes,
which
absolutely.
I want to get the details out one more. So they go where to see it again?
It's at the Santa Barbara Frame Shop and Gallery, mm-hmm. which is right across from the Arlington Theater, downtown Santa Barbara.
And that's first Thursday tonight. That's the grand opening this Saturday. And more. There's more on the web. There's a website. I've seen it. Where? How do they get there?
Yes, I have a blog. It's called buddhaabides.blogspot.com. And there you can read about the whole history of this show, some philosophy, some logistics, and also origins and early experiences and so forth.
I've been speaking with Lark Bateau, who produces Buddha Abides, now in its 11th year. Lark, thanks for taking the time to come back on the show.
Thank you, Colin. It's been great.
It's Poodle Radio on KCSB 91.9. Stay tuned. We're talking about more interesting stuff, including a coverage of a recent article written by Isabel Walker, of course, on homelessness in Santa Barbara and what's being done about it, as well as cycle mania in Santa Barbara. It is May. It is time for mania, and it is specifically time for mania about bicycles. So stay tuned to KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. It's KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. My name is Colin Marshall. This is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent on KCSB. Here in some more tracks, they're organized by pop culture editor Ali Cumingore. That was The Dangerous Ponies with I Only Wear My Favorite Clothes at Home. They're playing the Bico Co-op Garage here in Isla Vista on Wednesday, May 11th. Before that, we heard Through the Floor from the Crystal Stilts. They're playing Muddy Waters in downtown Santa Barbara on Thursday, May 5th. Now, those of you who keep up with our frequent guest on this program, semi-frequent, I would say, Isabel Walker, who writes about homeless issues for The Indie, she has written a profile recently in The Indie on an organization called Wheelbridge of Santa Barbara. And I have two people from Wheelbridge. I have Linnell Williams, the executive director, and Roz Sherman, the case manager. Linnell, Roz, thanks for showing up to KCSB. Thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, this profile, it's a substantial one that Isabel has written. It's a fascinating one, but I want to first get some basics out here. The core mission of Wheelbridge is, in your words, what?
To end suffering for the chronic homeless, mentally ill, to provide them a safe haven and a transitional program so that they can reestablish themselves.
Now, this is a population we've talked about before when Isabel's been on the show, but I want to hear a little bit from you both about the character of this population in Santa Barbara. How many are there? How many are the average Santa Barbaran aware of? I mean, how much more do we need to know about this population, those of us who are not working in contact with them?
Well, I would say that the homeless population, I think our statistics say that average around, and this would be countywide, just over 6,000. However, the population we serve is represented by about 15% of that population.
Okay. And there's an example, I guess you might say, or the story that Isabel leads off with in her profile about a fellow named, I believe, Ken, who ends up coming to Wheelbridge. How representative a story is his story?
Oh, very, very much so. He was our first male client, and if my memory serves me well, he had been homeless for some 12 to 15 years, very much isolated, not in contact with his family at all, very much had the presentation of someone that would live in the wilderness.
Oh, really?
And so it took him about 6 months to get acclimated to being inside.
Now, Roz, as the case manager, I mean, was this a case you were involved with?
I've been with Wheelbridge almost 3 years, but Ken was before my time.
Okay.
But there's a gentleman who recently came to Wheelbridge, and he had been out of contact with his foster mom for many, many years and was recently reunited with her over the phone, and it's made a big impact to have that reconnection. And that's really what we strive for, is to find family and to help people reconnect with their past so they can heal it.
How often do they have family to find? I mean, I often hear about the homeless population. Their main problem is that they've lost their family or don't have one. How often can you put them in touch with someone that they know that's connected to them?
A large segment of our homeless population are indigenous to Santa Barbara County. So in most cases, it's pretty easy. We don't get a lot of people who are not necessarily from this area or have some kind of a tie to the area very frequently. So the majority do have some family ties here.
Now, I want to get the sense as well of how people come to Wheelbridge. What brings them here? And I know either of you can tell me a lot about this. So what's a common way somebody finds their way to Wheelbridge?
We have a formal referral process, and we partner with Alcohol, Drug, and Mental Health, their CARES outreach team. We partner with Restorative Policing. We partner with Parole and Probation Department, and they now have a local program called Community Solutions, and so they also make referrals. So we have several gateways.
And what to your minds, does Wheelbridge do differently than other comparable organizations someone might go to or might be referred to for help? I mean, what makes Wheelbridge special, I guess I could say, because this is something Isabel touches on in the article, but I want to hear directly from you. What do you think is different about Wheelbridge?
Well, I think that we really care about the individuals. We create a plan for their success. We one of the first things we do is find out what the gaps are in their plan. We have them create a plan and reinforce it with positive motivation and mentoring. And we have weekly meetings, one-on-one meetings, to make sure that they're on target. For example, someone may come into our organization and they need to apply for Social Security. So I walk them through those steps and make sure that they're following through at all times to fill out the forms, go to the meetings, those kinds of things that people on the streets really have a hard time with.
One of the other things that I think is really key for us is that our philosophy is that we never give up. Mm-hmm. And so even though a lot of our clients face certain challenges, if they choose not to be ready to move forward, they always know that they have the opportunity to come back to us if they choose to leave. Or we've had clients leave and we've gone to find them and brought them back home.
Now, how often does that happen where the client leaves or they leave and you have to find them, or they leave and they come back? Is this a frequent occurrence where they leave?
No. We have a pretty high success rate of clients once they've come with us, getting established and moving on. But I would say maybe 10%.
I want to know what the main challenges are as well. I mean, of course, every case is going to be completely different, but what are you up against in getting these clients back on the road to a life that makes more sense for them that we wouldn't necessarily expect, because there's all kinds of things we could guess about. But what are really the hard parts about this?
One of the main things is, one, for them to acknowledge that they have a challenge, that a mental health challenge that needs to be addressed, and then becoming med compliant and following through with the prescribed treatment that the doctors have laid out for them would be one.
Also, I think that sometimes people who are chronically homeless and been living on the streets in substandard conditions don't feel worthy, like deserving of a good bed to sleep in, good food, the support system that we provide.
Right.
I think that makes such an incredible difference, and they open their hearts by coming to us. And sometimes the pull, though, back to the streets is very strong. And the people, you know, that they used to hang out with are no longer appropriate for them as they grow and develop and go to AA or NA programs or get some psychological counseling. And it takes a revolutionary idea for them to be able to let go of the past and step into their new future in the present with us.
Now, that's something that my listeners here on the show might have a hard time understanding, because if they haven't lived on the streets, they'll think that the draw of the streets again, why would they want to go back? So I guess, is it just about that's where their friends are? That's where their past is?
I think it's more than that. Usually, the key is homelessness always happens as a result of a situation or a circumstance.
Mm.
And if that circumstance or situation can't be arrested within an appropriate time frame, the person now has stepped into a form of lifestyle. And once you address, they start to be familiar with that form of lifestyle, it goes into a form of a mindset. And that's where the bondage of homelessness comes in. And so we have to now walk them backwards to get them back to where they were. And that's the challenge.
So for someone living on the streets, if they stop living on the streets, even for a moment, it's just kind of like, wait, this is weird. It's weird to them, right?
Absolutely. You would think that someone would be excited about coming inside and having, like she said, having a nice warm bed. And our experience has been that it may take 3 or 4 months for a person not to want to sleep in their clothes. We insist that they take off their shoes. However, they may not want to put on pajamas or get under the covers.
Right.
And that seems odd to us, but it's very real for them.
And that was an evocative image in Isabel's story, how this fellow, Ken, slept in his clothes. And that really illustrates that mindset. You get into your habit. It's kind of like if I moved out onto the streets tomorrow, I would be like, I'm sleeping in my clothes on the street. This feels wrong to them,
right,
to sleep in a bed. Now, what kinds of turnarounds do you see, you know, given a long time and the effort needed to get someone off the streets, to let them help themselves to a large degree as well? I mean, do they get to a state where we would never guess that they had this terrible circumstance of living on the streets? I mean, do they rejoin society in a way that's just we'd never even know?
Yeah, we have a gentleman who's now 63, had been with Woolbridge almost 4 years, and he got into senior housing a couple of months ago. Mm. It is our goal to help transition the individual onto other housing opportunities. And in his situation, I just saw him yesterday, and he says, I'm so happy and relaxed. And he just loves his little studio apartment that he has with senior housing and just is happy as a clam. And it's so gratifying to see how far he's come in the last 4 years from when he first came to the organization to today is just outstanding.
Now, listeners who have not read Isabel's article in The Independent, The Profile of Woolbridge of Santa Barbara, can find that on independent.com. But where else can they go to learn more about Woolbridge and what you do?
We have a website. It's woolbridgeofsantabarbarainc.org. Or they can call in at 805-564-1911. And we would be more than happy to mail them information on the program.
I've been speaking with Linnell Williams, who is the executive director of Woolbridge of Santa Barbara, and Roz Sherman, who is the case manager there. Of course, Woolbridge recently profiled, as I said, by Isabel Walker in the Santa Barbara Independent. Linnell, Roz, thanks so much for taking the time this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Colin.
This is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. Stay tuned. We're talking to Ed France, the director of the Santa Barbara Bicycle Coalition and BC Centro, in just a moment here on Poodle Radio. Stay tuned. Going to talk about May Cycle Mania.
But I won't let my mind fret, 'cause I know everything will be alright.
I may regret the things I said, but I won't let my mind fret, 'cause I know everything will be alright.
It's KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. You're hearing another track organized by pop culture editor Ali Cumingore. He's my brother, she's my sister, he's my brother, she's my sister. That's the artist. How Am I Gonna Get Back Home is the name of the song. They're playing Zoe's Cafe on Saturday, May 7th. Now it is the month of May. It is also the month of Cycle Mania in Santa Barbara. Here to talk about it, I've got Ed France, Executive Director of the Santa Barbara Bicycle Coalition and BC Centro, joining me in the control room here. Ed, welcome.
Colin, thanks so much for having me.
Cycle Mania. This is huge. I've read the schedule. I've seen there's so many events. What is it?
It is a happening to celebrate Bike Month, where we host community members hosting their own events. And as such, we have over 25 events through the months of May and into June.
So about hosting community members hosting their own events. So it's a venue for biking Santa Barbarans to get their own things going and have them all under this one umbrella.
Yeah, bicycling has a diverse pockets of cyclists and people with different interests in the field, so to say, and we want to celebrate that. And so we have kids events, we have a fashion show tonight, we have a high school mountain bike competition being held here in Santa Barbara County for the whole state. We have from just fun rides, backcountry mountain bike rides, to training for how to be a confident rider, kind of the full gamut.
This is something I want to start on talking about. The training aspect, there's some workshops, there's some clinics. I think I wouldn't be too bold in saying that someone who lives in Santa Barbara has always wanted to get on a bike here could figure it all out in the course of May, right? I mean, there's workshops that start from the ground up, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely. We have a four-part street skills series. And the thing to realize is, whereas you do a driver's training when you're in high school,
right?
Most of us do anyway.
Good old driver's ed.
You don't do the same thing for biking. And a lot of us don't have the confidence to hop on a bike and ride with traffic. And the reality is, aside from a few good separated bike facilities, most of us, especially those of us who live downtown or in the city of Goleta, have to commute on roads with cars. And some skill set for how to properly manage that can mitigate risk and make your commute fun and stress-free.
Now let's take the ride. I live downtown and I work at the university. That's a 45-minute ride across all kinds of bike trails, yes, but also roads. You're familiar.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
What does someone need to be aware of to do something like that? Say someone works at UCSB, they live downtown like me, they want to start biking. They don't know what they're doing necessarily. Let's not to put too fine a point on it, but they just pick up a bike. They think they're good because they can balance on a bike. They think they're good to go. What do they need to know that they don't need know they need to know?
There's a lot of counterintuitive things going on. First off, did you know, Colin, that if you're biking on the sidewalk, you're three times more likely to be involved in a collision than if you're on the road?
Three times more likely. Now, this is, correct me if I'm wrong, it's actually, I know in LA it's legal to bike on the sidewalk, but not recommended in any case, even here.
And no, it's not legal, and that's a city. So city to city, that varies, but it is not legal to ride on the sidewalk here. And
in Santa Barbara.
In Santa Barbara, right. Nor Goleta. And it's a bad idea because you're pitting bicyclists versus pedestrians. And in reality, bicyclists travel easily 10 to 15 to sometimes 20 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
We belong on the road. And as there are more bicyclists on the road, it becomes safer for everybody, not just bicyclists, but motorists as well, because people are aware. And the reality is, if you ride your bike the same way that you would drive a car, just a car that goes a little bit slower, you're in the safest, most effective spot.
So sharing the road, essentially, I mean, getting into the advanced studies a little bit more, really being able to share the road becomes an important skill as well. And that's something I would imagine there's workshops going on about that.
Yeah, we have four different street skills clinics. Mm. And the first clinic actually starts up on the 12th. And it's get your bike ready to ride over at BC Centro. And that's actually a great start because you get your feet wet just knowing how to do a basic tune on your bike or fix a flat.
Now, BC Centro, I guess I assume people know about it often who listen to the station, but I shouldn't assume that. It's a place I've gone to work on my bike. It's a place I've learned things I should have known before about how to work on my bike. How do you describe BC Centro?
It's a do-it-yourself bike repair center with help. And so we have volunteers who will help coach you through repairs that you may not have done before. We also have an inventory of just about all the used and new parts that you might need for whatever esoteric bike from 30 years ago that you still ride and
That's
keep alive.
That's good to know. Now, there might be, I know I felt this objection early on, saying, oh, I can't bring my crappy bike in there. There's these guys who are awesome at bikes who are going to see it, and they're just going to see everything wrong with it, and I'm going to hang my head in shame. They've seen the worst of the worst, right? Nothing surprises them.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, you know, quite a few people rely on a bike for transportation, and they don't have a fancy bike. Hmm. They have a bike that was bought at a department store, right? That really 5-10 years after that bike has been ridden hard, it was never even really designed. You know, a $60-$100 bike was not designed to ride. But we put in the effort, and we help people keep those bikes riding.
Even bikes that have gone unmaintained that whole time. Because a lot of times people won't even be putting anything on their chain. It's just...
Yeah. And when it's time to find a new bike, we actually help people find refurbished bikes. Mm. We refurbish bikes at BC Centro as well. We help people who buy bikes on Craigslist get them up to full tune. And the whole idea is we want to make it easier for people to be able to rely on their bike for transportation. Not just have it when it works, but have it daily in a way they can rely on. They're going to get to work on time with minimal hassle and actually the most fun.
It's in a sense, and this is something that ever since I read David Byrne's book, Bicycle Diaries, I've been interested in moving bikes out of necessarily just sport tools, but actual tools for life and for commuting and whatever. I mean, these taking them seriously as a form of transportation, right?
Yeah, there's a great statistic that in the United States, we own more bikes per capita than anywhere in the world.
What? Even China?
Yeah, we own those bikes.
Yeah.
They're in our garage.
The word
they're
was
in
not
our
ride.
Living room, right?
You did not say ride.
Exactly, and that's just the transition that has to happen is we have these machines that are totally efficient and are totally useful. Again, you don't have to take every trip that you would drive by bike, but 40% of all trips are less than 2 miles.
Right, easy on a bike.
Easy on a bike. In fact, you know, downtown, 2 miles on a bike is quicker often than 2 miles in a car.
Right. And State Street downtown, it's only like 8 miles long, the whole thing, right? So wherever you got to go in Santa Barbara, you're pretty good on a bike.
Yeah. And the whole thing is, as more people bike, it becomes easier for everybody. Hmm. And the good news is that that's already happened. We've gone from about 3% of people who regularly commute by bike to 5-6%.
Hmm.
So we're 5% in the city, 6% in the city of Goleta. And that's not even talking about Isla Vista. Right, which of course is the republic of bikedom, right?
Beach cruisers specifically, you know.
Yeah.
Now, we should mention this. I don't want to leave this out of the description of Cyclemania, because there's still things for people who are hardcore cyclists who've been 25, 30 years on a bike, right? I mean, there's still things they would want to do, even though they know how to do the maintenance, the street skills. What's for these guys and these guys and these gals?
A great example is you've been riding quite a bit and you've never done a team ride.
Mm.
Well, we have an invitation to ride with a team. I think that's with Rage Cycling, and they're hosting people who are not used to riding in a pack, but you know, have great biking skills. We have a backcountry mountain bike ride. You know, that's not for the faint of heart.
No.
To camp on your bike.
No.
Way out in the backcountry in Los Padres. So we've got the full range of skill. We actually have, and unfortunately, folks, this is way full, but we have a bike touring that, you know, weeks ago maxed out our capacity. But, you know, we're going to be teaching 35 people how to bike tour.
Right. Jeez. That's there's some scope to that operation there. Teaching 35 people how to bike tour. I would imagine people are going to get on the signups fairly early next year, given how quickly that filled up.
Yeah, hopefully we might even do a few throughout the year, because what a beautiful place to learn how to
right.
bike beyond your comfort zone.
Can't do much better than here for the scenery around you.
Yeah. But, you know, you can't do much better than here for the style as well. And I'd love to mention tonight is our big kickoff, and we have BC Bonita, which is our bike fashion show. And then we have a short distance but ton of fun bike ride that is actually the bike prom.
Bike prom.
Yeah,
all right.
There's a kind of unorganized ride that's been happening over the last couple of years downtown that's called Bike Moves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a ton of fun. And you ride with a whole crew of people who typically get dressed up for whatever the theme of the month is and just celebrate the enjoyment of being on a bike and,
right.
and being with friends. And the bike fashion show, I have to say, there's 27 different models wearing different, you know, great locally sourced, you know, high fashion kind of stuff with right. some locally sourced from our various bike shops. Really, really cool bikes.
Now, to reiterate the details, tonight's events, when and where, very specifically.
So downtown's part of First Thursday. Today mm-hmm. is First Thursday.
Right.
And at Casa de la Guerra, which is right by City Hall, that's Plaza de la Guerra. There's that old historic adobe. It's called Casa de la Guerra. About 5 o'clock, we'll be kicking things off. About 6 o'clock, the show itself. We started. We have over, again, 27 models displaying some of the finest wares that you can ride on your bike.
In the month of Cycle Mania, that's capital M-A-Y in the middle, where do they go to find out more about it?
Simply cyclemania.org. And thank you for spelling it. It
Cycle
is May.
Yes, it's Cycle Mania. In any case, I've been speaking with Ed France, the executive director of the Santa Barbara Bicycle Coalition in BC Centro. Ed, thanks for taking the time this morning.
Great. Colin, thanks so much.
This is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent, a special three executive director show today. We're going to close things out with one more track organized by Ali Cumingore, the pop culture editor of The Indie. I'm going to try to turn around as best I can to face the monitor. There we go. KCSB Improvisation. We're leaving things off with Body Breaks from Peggy Young. Concert data here on this one. She's playing Soho on Wednesday, May 11th. You can listen to the show again on independent.com later in the week, and I hope to have you here listening every Thursday, 8 until 9 in the morning on KCSB 91.9 to Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. Stay tuned. Got Question Air on the way. I'm open to yours and I'm open to mine. Body aches and that ache takes its time.